We're listening to the exquisite opening of Mozart's Last Symphony, his Symphony No. 41. It opens the next concert at the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra Classical Series called We Heart Mozart. Heart isn't strong enough of a verb for me. There's got to be something more than a heart for this.
We live Mozart, how about that?
Yes, we love Mozart, and what a stunning tribute this is, this whole concert.
You know, it's funny how one rediscovers Mozart for him or herself, as, you know, even professionals like myself. And I really played Mozart as a clarinetist from the very beginning and conducted many pieces by him. But not this particular piece, these two actually, the mass that we're playing this week. But also I just, you know, did a YouTube tour for myself with Mozart's music, starting with a sonata for two pianos in D major, a fairly late work that I never heard in my life, and mm-hmm. it's probably because of the instrument. I mean, you don't usually listen to two piano forehand and pieces, but there's always something to discover by Mozart, and this time I just discovered this amazing piece for myself. Perhaps you can play it for Morning Blend next time.
I can do that.
It's gorgeous, and it's not only that, but that spirit that only Mozart, you know, had, the playfulness and all those. Honestly, it's just a conversation between musicians when one listens to Mozart, and you can truly understand what he's doing.
I'm speaking, as you probably guessed, with Maestro Gregory Voida, artistic director and conductor of the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra, but we also have in our studios the artistic director and conductor of the Huntsville Community Chorus. Welcome, Billy Orton.
Good to be with you.
It's always good to see you, and it's always wonderful to hear the collaboration between these two organizations, the Community Chorus and the Huntsville Symphony.
It's a joy always for us to be able to do this as the chorus. It gives us a new venue, and it gives us a chance to do something with full orchestra. Mm-hmm. We don't often do full orchestra, although we just did with the Vaughan Williams. But it's a good chance to do that. And in this case, we are the symphonic chorus of the HCCA is being joined by singers from UAH, mm-hmm. Dr. Matt Carey. He's bringing his group over to sing with us. And then there'll be some singers from Oakwood University as well.
Oh, they're fabulous.
Dr. Andrew Marshall's group, mm-hmm. University singers. So.
A wonderful opportunity. But you could say there's only two pieces in this concert, just two works, just Mozart's Last Symphony and his Great Mass. That's all.
Well, it's a major symphony, and it's a major orchestral choral piece, both of them. And I rarely program, actually, pieces together that are in the same key.
Mm-hmm.
This one is a symphony in C major and the mass in C minor. Of course, it doesn't mean that you're listening to the same key for hours. It just means that that's the base key of the composition. And somehow I felt like because of the contrast between these two pieces, despite being written by the same composer, I think they go really well together.
They do, and they both have phenomenal backstories. Of course, Mozart himself, you could talk about Mozart forever. What a
you need phenomenal backstories for a radio show, right?
Yeah, yes, you do. Well, that's true. Okay. All right, here's a fun fact. The Symphony No. 41 was written, he wrote his last three symphonies in the space of just 3 weeks, 39, 40, and 41. In 6 weeks. I mean, if he accomplished those three in a lifetime, that would be phenomenal. And he had no commission.
I guess he had it in his head, though, right?
Yeah, but how do you
walk
around?
He just needed time to sit down. I don't know how he was walking around, seriously. Because just that much music in such a short, you know, life, though. He was a genius. There's no doubt about that.
And that's what I think is so wonderful about this concert. We have so much to choose from. I mean, the piano concertos, the operas, the divertimenti. But you chose these two particular pieces, and I think they do such a great job of encapsulating and illuminating the genius of Mozart.
That sounded great. Let's listen to some music.
I totally agree.
Thank you.
it would be worth the price of admission just to hear that.
It's a great movement. Of course, that movement's in C major. So the Mass begins in this great C minor feel. And I think the contrast you've programmed, Gregory, is marvelous. But when you leave that first movement, that we did not hear the first movement. This is the second movement, the glory. But the brightness and the life in it. But it's interesting that he starts in C minor and it's the Kyrie, the first movement, the Kyrie, is one of my favorite movements, and it has this feel to it that draws the audience in, draws musicians in, and then what we just heard is this celebrative, explosive, contrasting piece, tonality-wise, but also style-wise. So the chorus, particularly these first two movements, they've enjoyed in delving into the contrast of what it requires from them vocally.
And do they train differently for a piece like this?
They just train to sing it beautifully and well all the time.
They on the treadmills with their hot tea.
No. Of course, you always want more tenors, but it's a marvelous expression.
Mm-hmm. I think it's written in a very clever way, though. I mean, you can pace yourself for the more difficult movements, and this is one thing that amazes me about Mozart. It's he was not an avant-garde or experimental composer, or a composer who invented anything like Haydn was.
Right.
Haydn invented string quartet as a genre and symphony as a genre, and Mozart just practically put everything together that he learned about or he could possibly hear in the world around himself as a composer. There's this story that as a child he could actually write down a 40-part composition for chorus by memory. Okay, he was a genius, yes, mm-hmm. and he remembered really well the music he heard, but he also knew all the cliches, all the building blocks of the music, all the rules of the times, that how you were supposed to write a fugue or how you're supposed to write a gloria Gloria, writing a gloria had a long tradition among classical composers. And the amazing thing about Mozart is what he does with that. Like, kind of within the framework, every connection between two notes and the way he writes the orchestral part that to go with the choir, the way he manages the different parts within the chorus, that's just the work of a genius. Mm-hmm. But actually, he's actually staying within the borders of how it's supposed to go. And I think that fantastic energy that comes from that is like this genius, like being in this bottle in a way. Mm-hmm. That really is the power of his music.
And no one commissioned him to write this Mass. He just wrote a Mass.
Yeah, raw inspiration. Mm-hmm. And performers, what Gregory's saying, performers, instrumentalists and the singers, they draw from that same energy that's inherent in the score. They draw from it in a way that you don't often find in other composers. There's something about how he connected his spirit and this genius inside him with the artistic expression that's why it's so beloved and stays that way. Mm-hmm. One thing about the choral movements in the Mass is that they many times sound as if he reached back a little bit to Handel and Bach. Mm-hmm. He builds, to use Gregory's word, within the framework he has, the box wherever he's in, he creates such new things. But he is he's thinking like a Baroque composer in many places for the chorus. And you will hear a solo aria in just a second where it becomes much more forward-looking, much more operatic, much more classical other than the Baroque. But the chorus, this spring as we've worked on this, they've been heavily immersed. They could have been – it feels like Bach to them. It feels like Handel to them. All the rhythms in the orchestra and these weighty chords, weighty progressions and singing from the chorus – feel like Bach and Handel, especially. But the movement we just heard on the da 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 da, there's the Hallelujah chorus right there. And the very first night that we sang it, singers were commenting upon that figure which is probably from the most famous work of all, Messiah, the rhythmic figure at least. So we've had a ball sinking into that, into this from that perspective. And at the rehearsals and the concert this week, the chorus is getting a chance because they've not immersed themselves in the solo arias. They've not immersed themselves in what the soloist will be doing with the orchestra, which is a different feel, is it not?
Oh, it's totally. I mean, Mozart was also a prolific opera composer, and perhaps one can say that in the field of the opera, he did actually kind of discover new paths and how you can, you know, tell a story and how you use a voice. And this aria that we're going to hear now is just a perfect example of that. Thank you.
stunning, stunning solo from Mozart's symphony, or not symphony, his Mass in C minor that the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra and the Huntsville Community Chorus will be performing together this Saturday evening beginning at 7:30. One of the soloists is a familiar name to us, Christy Weber, will be singing along with Abigail Nims and Lawrence Wilford. Now, probably the most famous soloist this was ever composed for was Mrs. Mozart herself. He wrote this Mass, or a part of it anyway, for his new bride, Costanza, sort of to impress his dad when he came back to Salzburg. He said, I married this woman, and I wrote a Mass. Check it out.
And he always wrote for a particular singer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Every time he composed an opera or anything. And I think that, you know, tells a lot about his craft. It's like really just tailoring it to the singer. And it's actually two sopranos in this case. It's soprano one and soprano two. And this aria we just heard is a typical, you know, soprano two aria. If you look at any of the Mozart operas, you will find very similar a tone, a similar sound, and a similar idea of this coloratura singing that we just heard.
And this piece itself, I think, is a good Mozart sampler. If you've never listened to Mozart for whatever reason, this is a great way to hear small examples of everything that made him so great.
Absolutely, yes. Perhaps another choral movement?
The Sanctus.
Orton is enjoying this particular movement from Mozart's Mass in C minor, not just because of the choir, but because of the trombones.
Well, yes, you hear the trombone section there that Mozart obviously valued, as most good composers. No, it's a beautiful sound. We were rehearsing this piece this past week with the chorus, and I was just remarking about how he used the trombones in kind of a sacred way because of the text that was handled, and that was pretty typical.
But you had to ask the trombone players in the Huntsville Symphony not to play too loud this time?
I'm sure that's a regular conversation with the trombone players.
Who are they going to listen to, you or Gregory?
They'll listen to Gregory.
Actually, you know,
they'll
back
listen.
In the days, those trombones were much smaller
much
than the ones
smaller.
that trombone players are using now.
They're cannons, big old honking things now. But they're
and
literally
and that's why they're actually supporting the yeah. vocal parts within the chorus. That's a function of the trombones, and that comes with this beautiful round sound that trombones can produce.
Yes.
And it does help the overall sound.
It does. It does. And these are really, really good players. This particular set of choruses here, the Sanctus and the Hosanna, written for double choir, double chorus. And so we won't be setting in antiphonal fashion. We'll be setting soprano one, soprano two, alto, tenor, bass. So for the conductor, he'll be able to just scan across. But the choirs will be separated. Choir one will be toward the front. Choir two will be across the back. So they'll be vertically in their section, but horizontally, you will hear when they can go back and forth. It won't make much difference in the VBC, but that this particular movement has them singing some things together and some things different, some things apart. The Hosanna, it is tricky. It's a complex. You talk about the genius of Mozart, mm-hmm. Just the complexity of his lines and how he structures this perfect building. He's built this thing that's just perfect, but for those of us trying to analyze it and make it come to life, you're trying to figure out who to bring out at which time, and you see that he's done a lot of the work for you. You just let the line sing, and use your good musicianship to bring your line out. You know, and it's a double fugue, so it's a complex movement. He saves that for the last.
And it's funny, Billy Orton is sitting here with his score open and flipping and referencing his score as he's talking about it. Do you ever leave the house without your score?
I love the score.
It shows. You'll be able to hear it live. I was telling Gregory Voida and Billy Orton off the air when I first listened to this on my crummy speakers in my computer. It was just fabulous, and it sounds great in my headphones, but it's going to be just transcendent live.
Yes.
And I always do lots of nerdy homework for these interviews, and I was reading an article about Mozart on NPR. He was asking different musicians, if you could meet Mozart, what would you ask him or say to him?
Wow.
I'll tell you what John Elliott Gardner said.
Okay.
He said, I would want to talk to him about his beliefs about religion and whether he felt comfortable writing for the church. Because he feels it's very significant that his two greatest church compositions were both left unfinished, his C minor Mass and the Requiem. And he was wondering if he came across some great roadblock which made it hard for him to set music to the Credo, the I Believe section of the Mass.
That's a great statement by Gardner. Of course, I love John Elliott mm-hmm. Gardner. His interpretations are just so wonderful with this music. And the Credo in this particular Mass, the Mass in C minor, it's one of the few places where the orchestra is not doubling in a few places with the strings or the winds, with the chorus is doing their thing, and the orchestra is doing its thing, and both are so sturdily, the chorus parts are really sturdily created, and the instrumental parts are too. That so we've joked in our rehearsals about there's a lot of stuff here to believe. There's a lot to this, and the text is the traditional text, but I do think there's something to his question.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there's something to his question. How did he see this? The things he was setting, he set these texts, these sacred texts, so beautifully and so expressively and meaningfully for the singers and for the players when they know what the text is with it. That all happens. So, what was Mozart's heart like? What was his understanding like? Gardner's a genius.
I think if he had a commission, he would have written 32 credos for you in about a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's I think how his brain worked. I would probably ask Mozart what he was drinking that night when we ran into each other at the Nook, or I don't know where he would go if he came to Huntsville. I think it's interesting from a conductor's and a performer's point of view of trying to find the meaning behind the work itself, but somehow, you know, Bach said that, oh no, I'm not writing any music. I'm just, you know, writing it down what I'm hearing coming from above.
Right.
And another famous thing is, you know, it's easy to play any keyboard instrument. You just have to push the right button at the right time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all these like kind of statements that are detaching the personality from the work always fascinate me, because I do believe that the work itself is more than its creator. And I would just want to have a really relaxed, fun conversation with him about life. I would not ask him at all about music. He'd probably be bored by those questions, you know. It's kind of like journalists asking questions.
You can hear these two magnificent Mozart performances, the Symphony No. 41, the Jupiter Symphony. He didn't call it that. I think it was his publicist who tacked that.
That actually started in Haydn's time. You know, they started giving titles to the symphonies.
Haydn had a bunch, yeah.
So people can recognize them more easily. And mm-hmm. also sometimes the audience did that because they liked a movement particularly or more than the others, like the Bear Symphony or the clock. It's only
surprise,
only yeah. one movement, right, yeah. in each of those symphonies, and these names stuck. But of course, it's much more than just a, you know, magnificent Jupiter last movement. It's probably the last movement that carries the title there, because it's just long and complex. Yet it's a real fantastic finale, like we expected from Mozart.
Right, you're talking about Bach, and there's almost a Bach-like fugue there at the end, lots of interweaving, and it's just, you listen to it and it sounds easy, but it can't possibly be that easy.
Oh, it is not easy, and the last movement of Jupiter Symphony is always on the audition list for string players, especially for if you want to audition. Like we just not long ago, we heard a bunch of bass players, for example, coming to audition to play with the Hans Fis Symphony, and they had to play about one or two pages of the bass part of this particular symphony.
And if they didn't drop their bow and storm off, then they got the job.
Or something like that.
Listening to the magnificent final movement of Mozart's final symphony, not his final composition, but the last symphony that he wrote, the Symphony No. 41. And again, going over all of his accomplishments, even if he just wrote 41 symphonies, that would be enough. Even if he just wrote his operas or his piano concertos or his choral works, that would be enough. But there's so much to Mozart, and you get to hear two fantastic samples coming up this Saturday evening beginning at 7:30 with the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra and the Huntsville Community Chorus. I'm wondering how you're going to keep the roof on the concert hall with this piece.
We don't want to keep the roof on the concert hall, right?
the singers at our rehearsal this past week, they went kind of to a new level of, you know, just excitement about, you know, they're getting their notes learned, they're getting everything together, and they realize this is a fantastic piece. And the Mass in C minor is not nearly as well known or as often performed. The Requiem's, you know, everybody knows that, and they've performed everywhere, but it's not as performed as often as it should be. It's a magnificent work. It's got variety and meaning and depth, but the singers enjoy singing it, and you know the players are going to love playing it. So,
and you know, to our lovely audience that's listening now, you know, come and get your dose of Mozart for the year. I mean, it does make a difference in your life, believe me, when you listen to some fantastic works like we're performing now at the VBC. It's just this genius and the energy and you know, and the love that's in the music. It can change your life.
I agree. I do. And there's more. This isn't the end of the series. A lot of times you will end the classical series with a choral group composition, but this isn't the end. There's more to come.
No, I actually programmed this Mozart piece at this time of the year because I was like, okay, the famous snow blizzard is going to be over by this time of the year, and we can still do other concerts that can, you know, bring a great audience to the hall. And I got to tell you that this season is actually pretty amazing because we have an even more amazing audience than usual, and they're very responsive. And it's almost regardless of what we're playing. I hope that is because of all the energy that we put into it. So I'm really looking forward to getting that great energy from the audience for this Mozart concert. But the next classical concert we are doing, we're actually doing it at First Baptist.
Oh, wonderful.
Church, we are...
Good place.
Yeah, really.
Yes. And we actually did a concert there last season, so it was a great experience for us. And last season it was with the organ, so the reason for us to go there was because we played the Saint-Saëns Symphony, nicknamed the organ. This time we have Tomáš Varga, the principal cellist of the Vienna Philharmonic, returning, and our new concertmaster, Julia Dina. They team up in Brahms's double concerto for violin and cello. And in the first half, we play some Bartok rhapsodies and some Brahms Hungarian dances. So it's not really a church program, but I love the acoustics and just the ambiance of First Baptist is just great.
And there's more to come for the Huntsville Community Chorus as well.
Yes, our final season concert is... well, actually, next week, our chamber chorale and our youth chorale are doing a concert, Here Comes the Sun, mm-hmm. At First Methodist, and that date on that is February 24. And then in April will be our season finale concert, April 6th. It's the very, very, very first Saturday of the month. But we're doing a matinee concert. The concert is called To the Moon and Back, and our whole season this year has been Sun, Moon, and Stars. And we're celebrating, of course, with the city,
the
big anniversary this year. But in that final concert, we have a music that will be very, very familiar. And we've also had a piece commissioned, a text that could straight out of Whitman, which could be addressed to the moon, the moon discoverers in it. So it's a great text and a great song. But that concert will be at First Baptist Church. Precisely because of the stained glass windows.
Oh, they're so cosmic! Yeah,
they're cosmic, uh-huh. And so when the chorus was asking me, could we come to First Baptist for this concert, for this final concert? And I said, sure. But I said, if you're wanting though to make reference to the stained glass windows, it needs to be a matinee because you can't see
right.
those at night.
Yeah.
So it'll be Saturday afternoon, April 6th at 3:00 to the moon and back.
And if you need more information about the Huntsville Community Chorus,
www.thechorus.org.
HSO's website is hso.org. I won't ask you hard questions like that, Gregory.
Oh, thank you very much.
The number to call, 256-539-4818. Billy Orton and Gregory Voida, it's been a pleasure.